Sex and college. Get them in the same sentence and you can easily start an argument. Our guest this hour aims to settle at least some of those arguments by getting information directly from college students about sex, both consensual and non-consensual. Vanessa Gregoriadis is the author of the book Blurred Lines, Rethinking Sex, Power, and Consent on Campus. Vanessa Gregoriadis reports primarily on pop culture, youth movements, and crime. She's a contributing editor at the New York Times Magazine and at Vanity Fair. Her profile of Karl Lagerfeld for New York Magazine won her a National Magazine Award for 2007. Hi, Vanessa.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, this could be such a loaded issue or set of issues. What made you decide to wade in?
Well, I thought that there was so much misinformation out there that somebody needed to go back to college campuses as a relatively unbiased observer. I'm not an activist on these issues, but I'm also no kind of rape apologist, and try to figure out what is really going on there.
College is a strange planet, you write, the example being that if someone grabbed your rear in a neighborhood, you'd be outraged, but still not a surprising act at a campus party?
Absolutely. I mean, there's all sorts of sexual misbehavior that crosses into criminal acts that we as Americans just accept as fine if you're in college and you're at a louche fraternity party. Anything really goes. It's all right. You know, and then just, you know, shove it under the rug. You don't need to talk about it. It's just a weird thing that happened to you in college. And we have a new generation of girls who are saying, no, I'm not going to just shove it under the rug. I'm going to come out with my name. I'm not going to be ashamed. And I'm going to tell people this behavior is wrong. And I'm going to stand up for myself.
That's a big one, coming out with their names. I mean, people are willing to be identified when they're making the complaints about somebody sexually assaulting them.
Right. 20-year-old girls are absolutely committed to taking the shame out of this subject. I mean, it's wild, right? Because we still have news outlets that routinely will say, we are not going to name this victim of sexual assault because that is our policy. You know, in my book, I offered pseudonyms to a lot of girls in college who really looked at me mouth agape and said, well, why would I want to take my name off my story? And I would mumble something about, you know, your parents and your Google page. And, you know, and they would say, no, that's, you know, part of the morality here to me means speaking up proudly, saying I did nothing wrong, it's not my fault, and I want people to know that this is happening and needs to stop.
Interesting. So yeah, we're coming up with a news organization defense generally. It's like, well, we protect the names of people who've been sexually assaulted, and their response is, don't bother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's really a new set of standards here. So I really wrote the book for parents to learn, like, how can we protect our daughters from this happening and also protect our sons from being accused of assaulting somebody? Because of these new standards that have changed in the last few years, parents need to understand, like, you know, boys are going to be expected to have sex in a way that is thoughtful and compassionate, creates more self-esteem in the partner, not less, doesn't leave the girl feeling violated. I mean, there's a really wild shift happening here, and everybody, you know, needs to recognize it and be able to talk to their kids about it.
Your immersion as a researcher certainly helps us as readers to remember, and for those of us who haven't been to college, to get a sense of what it's like. I mean, it really is different. I mean, huge groups of people, all generally the same age, and just sort of assumptions about we all know each other, but you come up with this concept I hadn't heard before, in-network strangers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, a lot of assault that happens in college happens at the beginning of school. Like, it happens right about now, right? And researchers actually call this the red zone. For freshman girls particularly, it's a very dangerous time because they're coming into contact with all of these people on campus that they kind of innocently think are safe, right? Because they're just in-network strangers. They're the guy from the next dorm over, he seems okay, right? Oh, there's a friend of the frat brother who invited me to this party earlier on the quad. Well, that guy seems okay, too. And they kind of blithely walk into some very dangerous situations where if that was a bar in a city, they probably wouldn't even give that guy they didn't know, you know, the time of day. Now they're willing to say, oh, yeah, sure, it sounds fun to go back to your house to a party. you know, with no intention of hooking up with this person. But the guy, of course, may have very different intentions.
Ah, so the expectations are different from the two partners in a particular meeting up of people.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think, you know, through the ages, many nights, you know, the guys are expecting things to go all the way, and the girls are not really sure. And that's where a lot of confusion comes, and a lot of guys take advantage and pressure and coerce girls into doing things that they really don't necessarily want to do. And, you know, the girls also need to have their boundaries very straight and be a bit more wary.
You had to acknowledge Robin Thicke and the song Blurred Lines. Did you seek out a different title for this book?
That was my muse. Robin Thicke is my muse. No, I mean, Blurred Lines by Robin Thicke is, you know, was kind of one of the most hated songs of 2013, but also one of the most popular songs in which, you know, he's kind of one of these blue-eyed, you know, white guy romance crooners. But his romantic line there was, you know, I know you're a good girl, you know, you say no, but you really mean yes, which is clearly a line that I think we can all, you know, say, like, come on, it's 2017. Let's not pretend that that's always the case.
Sure. You know? Very different story told in the book, Blurred Lines. We'll come back and talk more with the author, Vanessa Gregoriadis, when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute five. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest is Vanessa Gregoriadis, who reports on pop culture, youth movements, and crime. She's a contributing editor at the New York Times Magazine and at Vanity Fair. She has done some research right down to the campus level. She looks young enough to pass for a student at campuses, and so she went there to talk to people about sex, consensual and non-consensual, and emerged with a book called Blurred Lines. Not the same as the Robin Thicke song, Blurred Lines, Rethinking Sex, Power, and Consent on Campus. You can join the conversation on the Exchange, 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Vanessa, the mattress girl of Columbia University shows up a lot. That name is self-applied, right?
Oh, no. She actually hates that name. Emma Sulkowitz is, of course, her real name. No, that was, you know, a moniker. That was kind of a New York Post moniker, right? That was something that the New York media applied to her because she was carrying her mattress around Columbia's campus, which is something she did to protest. The boy who she called her rapist had not been punished by Columbia. So as an art project, she said, I'm going to make my private suffering public. I'm going to carry this mattress until you expel him or I graduate. And indeed, they did not expel him. And she did carry it to graduation, much to the chagrin of the college president of Columbia, who sent out an email right before graduation saying, students are discouraged from carrying large objects to this ceremony that might cause others distress.
Did she carry the mattress to graduation?
Indeed she did. Indeed she did, right up to the platform with him. And, you know, to make each student into an alum, the Columbia tradition is to shake hands. And when she approached, he turned around and took a swig of his water bottle until she walked off stage that he did not shake her hand. You know, I mean, I think experts say there might be some legal reason for that. He didn't want to be seen as endorsing the project. That would be seen as the university, you know, speaking on this in some way, which is somewhat illegal. And he was, of course, involved in a lawsuit with a boy who was suing Columbia to say, you know, what happened here wasn't fair and I was bullied.
So there are three parts to the book: consensual, non-consensual, and the man. What sense of the man?
Well, the third part of Blurred Lines, I thought it was important to get into what the university administrators are doing, what Title IX, which is the law that regulates sexual assault on campus, is really about, and also what Betsy DeVos is planning to do about this issue. And there's new reporting that indicates that this week, you know, she will be going to the Anton Scalia Law Center at George Mason University and giving a speech during which she will say that she is not going to uphold a lot of the protections for survivors on campus. So I wanted to get into what the adults think. I call them all the man.
So let's talk about the Betsy DeVos part of this. I mean, so not uphold. I mean, so is she just saying she's not going to enforce Title IX? Is that the essence of it?
Well, some of this is legislated. So, you know, universities have to have prevention programs where they say, don't rape your fellow student, try to think about this in an ethical manner, whatever they need, you know, they want to put during their orientation. They are certainly doing that, and Congress has legislated that, so she won't be able to turn that back. But she's really going to try to cut the campus courts off at the knees and make it much, much harder to expel a boy for sexual assault.
All right. We will see what develops later this week on that. But to come back to what you did in the book Blurred Lines, and Vanessa Gregoriadis is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, you stuck with heterosexual experiences. Why?
Well, I mean, much of sexual assault has to do with cultural norms about boys and girls. A boy must pursue a girl at all costs, push at all costs, even if you get a no, because girls will always say no before they say yes. And if you're a real man, you know, you'll try to persuade her. That's the way a real guy in college, a real boy gets laid. And I think that, you know, that's really something's pretty specific to heterosexual sex.
So you essentially took your young looking face and went back to campus. You do get carded still, is that right?
I actually took my babysitters because I'm a Gen X mother of two. So I figured I couldn't show my driver's license from the 1970s when I was going into a frat party. So I took my babysitter's driver's license that said she was 24. And I used to use that to go into parties.
So how different did you find the entire college environment? You even went to your alma mater, Wesleyan. Mm-hmm. How different an environment from when you were there?
In some ways, college remains the same, right? You're talking to kids and you're like, oh my God, they're just like the way I was. You know, that's what's so great about going back to college. That's why alums love going back to their alma maters, right? Because you suddenly feel like you're in a time machine and you just time traveled and you yourself are so young. You imagine yourself back then. You know, on the other hand, like, colleges are really corporate now. They're really fancy. You know, my alma mater accepted 40% Wesleyan when I went there in the 90s and now accepts 17%. It's a private school in Connecticut. The tuition is over $50,000 a year. You know, almost 20% of that school, the parents are part of the 1%. So you really have a sense that this place has been transformed into a country club in some ways. And, you know, this is going on at state schools as well. Everybody's building a big gym. Everybody wants a big football team. You know, everybody wants to bring in the revenue. But at what cost? You know, the students aren't getting better teaching. We know that. You know, they actually may be getting less rigorous coursework. So why are these universities involved in this kind of arms race here? It's really baffling.
So you mentioned that Wesleyan has a nickname, and it's not necessarily a friendly one.
PCU.
Yeah.
Yes.
As in Political Correctness.
Indeed.
University. Yeah.
So, yeah.
And in fact, you do provide a trigger warning in here. What are your thoughts on trigger warnings and the general view of how people are coddled on campus these days?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, my number one viewpoint is that the alt-right has done a really good job of blowing up the campus left into this kind of cartoon of coddled, you know, grabbing onto the mantle of victimhood, just these little snowflakes there, and they're always flipping out if you say the littlest thing. You know, and that's not really the case. That is really something that is being put out as a media story for people who are, you know, kind of center and center right and maybe even far right to grab onto. You know, the fact is that trigger warnings are kind of de rigueur among us, a young set of people. I postulate in my book that, you know, a lot of these kids really were bullied or bullied each other in middle school. And when they get to college, they're post-adolescence, like moral ideas, they like black and white, and they start thinking, oh, we need an ethics of kindness. And trigger warnings are about kindness. They're about letting a reader know, okay, some hard-to-read information is coming now. That's it. So that's why I did it in my book, because I felt, you know, I hear that argument.
And there is some hard-to-read information, no doubt. The question is called, the book, rather, is called Blurred Lines, Rethinking Sex, Power, and Consent on Campus. It is the work of Vanessa Gregoriadis, who is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Your thoughts are welcome here. 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. So at Wesleyan, Chloe, a student you spent some time with, says there are so many rapists on this campus. Did she mean that literally?
Oh, yes, literally. I mean, you know, rape, which is penetration, right, against the will of a woman, meaning something violent or a threat of violence or a completely passed out woman, right, is used really as a synonym for sexual assault, which can mean anything that's non-penetrative. It might even mean speech that denigrates women, and... You know, college girls, I mean, look, the language of rape is very powerful, right? Nobody over 25 years old would use that word lightly. But under 25 years old, they're using it really as a synonym for a lot of stuff that, you know, older generations wouldn't call rape.
All right, so let's come back to one of the points you mentioned earlier. You're not a rape apologist here, but it seems like what you're saying is that the term rape is used rather loosely to indicate a much broader range of things that are not legally technically rape.
Correct. I mean, I think we need to be honest about that, because if we aren't honest about that, then we are listening to the alt-right tell us that all of these girls are lying. I mean, Betsy DeVos's deputy recently said that 90% of these cases are bogus. They're all just, we were both drunk, or we were going out, and 6 months later I decided that there was something about the last night of us sleeping together before we broke up that was not just right. That just didn't sit right with me. Okay, she's on the record saying that. So I'm trying to say, almost in a maybe Clintonian way, like, let's think of this in a third way. And the third way to think of this is that things are happening that all Americans wouldn't call rape, but college kids are actively broadening this definition, and they are trying to include things that may be somewhat immoral. Definitely what Donald Trump is accused of doing, definitely things that some Americans would just call groping, right? And a lot of Americans didn't really care because we elected him president. So clearly that was, if a half a dozen women had come out and said Donald Trump raped me, and it was the definition of rape that all Americans accept, he would not be president, right? He's president because of this other stuff is very murky, and not everybody accepts it as anything more than boys will be boys and locker room talk.
So to the other excusers, you know, the boys will be boys stuff, locker room talk, and then you mentioned Betsy DeVos's deputy, we were both drunk. I mean, you did talk to a lot of people about the intersection of alcohol and sex, and what mm-hmm. what general impression did you walk away with?
My general impression is that alcohol is definitely used by guys to get women drunk, just, you know, give her a drink, tell her you love her, have sex with her, you know? I mean, that's the play, right? I mean, that's the easy play in for a guy who doesn't have much game in college. I also think on the flip side, you know, women have to be aware that, you know, everything in moderation. Go have a drink, go have a few drinks. Don't have more than 9 drinks, because unsurprisingly, I mean, 9 drinks for a woman is a lot, right? And unsurprisingly, you're not going to be in control of yourself after that, and you have a much higher probability of being assaulted.
So this is, it goes beyond anecdotal. I mean, you did talk to a lot of people, and it was quite a contrast going from Wesleyan to Syracuse. But I want to get to Paula England's survey on sex, because she actually talked to many, many, many people to pull in some information here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's interviewed over 21,000 students, I think, at 21 universities. I mean, she has the gold standard survey on sex in college among college students, and she's been running it for, you know, over a decade.
And what sorts of things did she find out?
Well, I mean, interestingly, she found out that like 20% of college students are virgins upon graduation. So, you know, we really have to keep in mind, like, when we're talking about sex and sexual assault at college campuses, we are talking about kids who really don't hook up that much, really may have only had sex once or twice or not at all, who are going into their first sexual experiences and then reporting to us that they feel incredibly violated by those experiences and that there was sexual assault within those experiences.
All right, and I admit to being somewhat confused at this point in the book. The book is Blurred Lines, Rethinking Sex, Power, and Consent on Campus. Vanessa Gregoriadis is the author and our guest in the exchange. So by this point in the book, I mean, you get the impression that college students are less hung up on getting a rep for having sex. At the same time, having less sex, there is more sexual assault, apparently, but more guys at the same time cool with making sure they obtain the proper consent before they move ahead.
It's very confusing, right? I mean, look, in my book, I'm not talking to people who are virgins. I'm talking to people who have had sex, right? But it is true that, you know, we're in a time now where social media has created this kind of, like, performative sexual self that all of these kids are putting up pictures of themselves, just, I'm a player, you know, I'm a dressed up like a Playboy bunny going to this party, I look really sexy in this picture, and yet their sexual experience is pretty limited, you know? So if we know that, and we also know that they're reporting that they're having experienced a lot of sexual assault, even though they've only had sex a couple of times, then we know that there's something funky going on about those early sexual experiences between kids. And that gets into, we need some sex ed to educate these kids so they can enjoy those experiences instead of feel violated by those experiences.
Which raises the question, I wonder if that's one of the things that Paula England asked about in her survey of all those students, whether they had received much sexual education in school.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if she did talk about that, but, you know, we certainly know that most kids don't. You know, there are surveys that show that this young millennial group will say that their best sex ed that they've had is pornography.
Okay, that's another realm I definitely wanted to get to, because it seems like the availability of pornography on the web makes it like they're using it like a teaching tool, like it mm-hmm. is a MOOC or something.
Right, of course. I mean, how could it be anything but that? They can access it from an incredibly young age. You know, whether they learn about sex ed in high school or middle school or not, most likely, you know, if they're outside the state of California, they're probably not learning about consent. They're not learning about what a consensual experience looks like. They're just learning, you know, the base, this is syphilis, here's a banana, let's put a condom on it. I mean, this is the kind of stuff kids learn, right? So when they want to look at, like, well, what does sex really look like? I mean, my God, they have a pretty good example right there at their fingertips, right? And that's really teaching them all the wrong lessons.
What kinds of things do they take away? I mean, they're not getting anything, I would think, from pornography in terms of, like, this is how you tell a person you care about them. This is how you express feelings to them. None of that mm-hmm. stuff was reflected in pornography, right?
No, I mean, it's not even about, you know, really desire, right? I mean, sometimes it is a little bit, but it's more just about, like, the anatomical positions. It's also, you know, it's the data is extremely clear that, like, blowjobs for high schoolers, middle schoolers, you know, college students. I mean, this is all way, 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 way up, you know, and that has to be not just, you know, Bill Clinton's fault and Monica Lewinsky's fault. That has to be because, you know, not only are, you know, different kinds of sex are more acceptable now in America, but also that's what people see in porn a lot.
And you point out that being anti-porn is just not very cool right now.
No, I mean, I would talk to young feminists on campus, and they would tell me that they were anti-porn, and then, you know, put a finger to their lips and say, shush, don't tell anybody I said that. That's not cool. You're not supposed to say that. You know, you need to be sex positive in all ways now, and that's part of being like a cool young woman.
Wow. Sex positive and many other concepts here as we talk about Blurred Lines, Rethinking Sex, Power, and Consent on Campus, the book by Vanessa Grigoriadis. She's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We'll come back and talk more with her. And if you'd like to join us, we'll take phone calls and emails from you when we return in a minute 15. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest is Vanessa Grigoriadis, a contributing editor of the New York Times Magazine and at Vanity Fair. She is the author of a book about sex on college campuses, which bears the same title as the song that really isn't like this at all, but it's called Blurred Lines, Rethinking Sex, Power, and Consent on Campus. You can join our conversation on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Let me warn you once again, we are talking in fairly colloquial terms about some sexual activity, and so your eyebrows might go up, but we're still staying within FCC guidelines. Vanessa, the whole thing about terminology certainly gets a lot of people tripped up, and we talked about the fact you're not a rape apologist by any stretch of the imagination, but rape is a term getting used to describe pretty much any unwanted sexual attention or touching.
Mm-hmm. Look, that's you know, that's being used among college kids who like things to be very, very clear and who are cottoning to ideas that they've never heard before. You know, this is still a small group of people. I do think that the question about groping and whether groping is sexual assault is a really vital question that a lot of Americans have different opinions on.
And we haven't really reached that as a society, it sounds like, outside of college campuses.
No, absolutely. I mean, there is really an urgent, like, national debate going on about what sexual assault really is. What is really sexual harassment? Oh, people just like to flirt in offices. Come on. So many people are married who met in offices. How can we say that can't happen? Come on. College is just, you know, it's just fun. I mean, you were in that wet T-shirt contest, right? Like, does it really matter if I walked by and squeezed your boobs? You just showed them to everybody. I mean, these are the kinds of, like, real situations that are going on that aren't about scary, scary predators leaping out, you know, from the back of the library and attacking somebody.
Well, and there is, as you point out, a vast middle ground here. I mean, there's no explicit force in a lot of these cases, no consent either, though. I mean, so it sounds lots of it goes unreported still, I would think.
Oh, absolutely. And the question of whether, you know, something that's not physically violent should be considered rape is a very, very vital question as well. And most people have very different opinions on that. Betsy DeVos's deputy, once again, Candace Jackson, when she said that stuff about 90% of the women are lying, she also said something that was very interesting. She said, in most of these campus cases, there is not even an allegation that the young man overrode the will of the young woman. In other words, there was no physical violence. And Betsy DeVos and Candace Jackson say, if there's no physical violence, it is not sexual assault.
But how does one determine the will of another person?
Well, that's the will. I mean, we all know what that's code for. I mean, that's code for, you know, you held somebody's arm back. That's code for, you know, you physically assaulted that person. She has bruises. She has, you know, there's evidence here. A cop would take this case. We know that that's not what's happening during most sexual assaults and during most rapes. They're happening among acquaintances. There's often not physical violence used. So they're really, you know, they're in kind of the dark ages on this.
Well, and it seems like the whole country might be up to some point, because the whole idea of consenting to sexual activity, that the level of consent can change over the course of a series of sexual acts. I mean, somebody can say, yeah, I'm okay with this, this, and this, but not this.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, you know, this is where we get into kind of things that adults think are kind of ridiculous, right? Because people who have had sex for quite a long time or with the same partner for quite a long time know that you don't need to ask explicit permission for each sexual act from first base to going all the way, right? But again, we're talking about kids. We're talking about kids who are extremely inexperienced. They've only had sex a couple of times. Sex is going to be pretty exciting and pretty weird for them, no matter if they have to ask all the time if it's okay for them to do this.
So you take us back to the 1990s and a Saturday Night Live sketch on date rape. And I remember looking at the, I was still in TV then, looking at audition tapes from people in college who thought that if you said the word date rape enough, it would become something you'd get used to. But I mean, it got ridiculed on this SNL sketch.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, there was a pretty severe backlash to the ideas from the 90s that were the PC ideas, right? That were about diversity, were about women being protected from sexual assault. Antioch University in Ohio had exactly this same rule we were just discussing, this yes means yes rule that is the law in all public and private universities throughout California today. You know, Antioch University had that law, and Saturday Night Live had, you know, Shannon Daugherty pretending to be, you know, quote unquote, a major in victimization studies, and had her, you know, playing a Jeopardy-like game where she just called everything date rape. Like, somebody moves your futon for you on the first day of school, and she would hit like her buzzer and say, "That's date rape," you know. So that was a severe backlash, and right now I think we're seeing the beginning of a backlash as well.
So what that whatever happened to that rule at Antioch University, because it was about, you know, you had to ask permission pretty much at every step along the way of the process.
Well, that rule is now the law in California for all, you know, every single school from you know, the University of Santa Cruz to Stanford. It's also the rule at all schools in New York State, all schools in Illinois, all schools in Connecticut, and all the Ivy Leagues, and pretty much, you know, a vast majority of the state schools. So any kid who's going to college today is learning no means no is not enough. Silence is not consent. You must get something enthusiastic, yes, I mean semi-enthusiastic, yes, I agree to do this with you, in order for it to be considered consensual.
Do you have any ideas? I mean, are there good ideas for how to move forward then in the cases where people are not really paying a great deal of attention to each other beyond genitalia because they're so drunk? I mean, giving consent and being able to even request consent are somewhat compromised, as are a lot of other executive functions at that point.
Sure. As somebody said to me, like, consent is golden, but what if you drink your consent away? This is clearly the most perplexing issue on college campuses where, you know, women are binge drinking in very high numbers. The binge drinking among men remains very high, despite the fact that we know that college kids are, you know, on their phones all the time and spending their leisure time on their phones. So you'd think that they would drink less, but it seems like when they go out at night, they just have no healthy examples. Like, they just drink themselves into oblivion. It's rough.
You hit a surprising moment, or a series of moments, I guess, when you stopped talking to students about consensual sex and took up the issue of assault. I mean, where did things turn?
Well, when I spoke with a lot, you know, I was trying to speak with kids that you don't hear from in the media. So I was trying to speak with sorority sisters or first-generation kids or kids from the ghetto or kids whose voices are not as, you know, kind of pure as some of the voices that you hear in the media where they say, I was assaulted. I'm not ashamed. I'm going to speak up loud and proud about this thing that happened to me. So I spoke with a lot of kids who were really confused about where the line between consensual and non-consensual was, despite, you know, what the universities were teaching them. And a lot of girls who really felt pressured and would say things like, I don't know how to say no. You know, I want, this guy seems to want it. I want him to be satisfied and happy. I feel I don't want to be a prude. Is this what other girls do? I don't want to be rude. I feel uncomfortable, but I don't know how to express myself. You know, and a lot of those girls feel really violated. While they wouldn't call themselves rape survivors, they have had some experiences that would really curl your hair.
But because they, you know, often, in many cases, just didn't know what their own standards were once they got into that situation.
Mm-hmm. I do think that this is a time where, you know, boundaries have to be very clear, and kids need to establish ahead of time, how far am I going to really go with this person? If I see this guy at this party, what am I going to do? Am I just going to make out with him but say, absolutely not, I'm not going to go home with you? I'm not going to let the guy dictate what is going to happen that night because I'm not sure what I want to do. I'm going to have it clear in my mind. I mean, it's so interesting because millennials are such planners, you know? They love to get all their ducks in a row, yet on consensual sex, they're still pretty loosey-goosey when they go out at night, not really sure what they're going to do, how far they're going to go, you know, and a lot of girls are letting guys dictate that situation.
Well, that was the next question. I mean, even if you are a good planner, I mean, do people resist planning in these situations because it makes them seem like they can't be spontaneous or something?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I think that's part of it. And I think it's also, you know, hard to think in the abstract about yourself as a sexual being. Women really think of themselves in terms of, well, you know, what does a guy want to do? How do I make him happy? His pleasure is prioritized. So that's where, you know, you get into some confusing situations that, again, you know, maybe they're not rape, but they are confusing.
All right. So the use of the term rape culture does get thrown around on a couple of campuses, and I have to believe that it's possible that it could be more present or more of an issue on some campuses than on others. What did you find in your own research?
Yeah, we have surveys that show that there are wildly varying rates of assault on various campuses. Most of those surveys, the universities don't want their brand attached to, so we often don't get the name of that university. What's really perplexing is that it seems that a party university might have the same rate as a small liberal arts college. So, wow, right? I mean, it has something to do, as one of the study's authors told me, with the majority cohort on the campus in terms of how they socialize and how they put themselves at risk. And that means alcohol. That really means alcohol. What is the way in which people are drinking? Is it more of a European style where, you know, okay, fine. I mean, college kids, they don't like to heat up food even. They're definitely not going to cook for themselves. But maybe with that quesadilla, do you have a glass of wine? Or is it that you go with an empty stomach to a party where in the backyard there's a beer funnel and whose turn is it?
So you get to be college president for a week, or maybe the deputy secretary of education. How then, Vanessa, would you approach some of the situations we're seeing where people are getting beyond their own boundaries and getting dealt with sexually in ways they don't want?
I mean, the most obvious action to take, which is somewhat stunning that it hasn't been done, is to tamp down the fraternities, whether that means co-educating some fraternities or regulating them better. Harvard has a study where 50% of the women on their campus that hung out at finals clubs and at fraternities said that they were sexually assaulted. And they had a number of 30% of their women on campus saying that they had been victims of sexual assault. That was a full 20% more. So that's why Harvard has taken the kind of radical step of, you know, really offending tons of their donors and a lot of the old guys who went to Harvard and saying, we are going to force these places to co-educate, or if you're a Harvard student and you want to be a captain of an athletic team and you belong to one of these places, even if it's underground, we will not allow you to be a captain. We will not write you an official recommendation for graduate school. We will not write you a recommendation for a Rhodes Scholarship. You know, I mean, Harvard students want all that stuff, right? They're very into achievement. So they're taking a stand.
Wow, so that's a big change in the Greek system at one university, but others, we'll see if they follow. There's a lot to think about in the book. It is not a small book, as you can consider, considering all the things that are wrapped up in sex on campus. The book is called Blurred Lines, Rethinking Sex, Power, and Consent on Campus. Vanessa Gregoriadis wrote it and joined us today on the Jefferson Exchange. Vanessa, thank you very much.